evening and welcome to Behind the News, our news and current affairs program which examines issues from the perspectives of newsmakers and experts. My name is Agatha Samoa, and tonight, who partners Nanado for election 2012 as a flag bearer meets National Executive Council of NPP tomorrow? Open letter to President Mills from NPP National Chairman. How does the government react to it? And civil society organizations in education say it is about time political parties stopped undue political interference in the country's education policies. What do the politicians make of this? And our text line is 0266677570. So you can also share your thoughts and comments on 0266677570. Text line again is 0266677570. Now to our first story. After months of speculation and lobbying for the running mate slot of the NPP, it appears the dust is about settling tomorrow when the party's flag bearer presents his choice of who partners him to the Council of Elders of the party. Before the major announcement, speculations are rife that Nanado will settle on his 2008 running mate, Dr. Mamadou Bawumia. Dr. Bawumia arrived in the country last night ahead of the announcement tomorrow. So does his arrival give credence to the fact that he is the obvious choice? Joining us on the line is Mr. Tony Cabo, who is the National Youth Organizer of the NPP. Many thanks for joining us. Tony, so what is tomorrow's meeting all about?
Well, I guess that, like you have said, tomorrow is the meeting of National Council of the party, which is the highest decision-making body after Congress, you know, where the flag bearer of the party, among other things, the party will be reviewing many other issues. Current ongoing biometric registration will be taking reports from our regions on the process so far, the difficulties being encountered, and I guess also that many other major steps that the party will be taking in the course of the year would also be looked at. And one of the most issues which is on the table for discussion, like the party earlier indicated in June, that its running mate will be selected in the first quarter of 2012. And I guess that the party is following its timetable. So tomorrow's meeting is in fact a very brief and short meeting, and a major decision like that will be expected from the flag bearer of the party, where he would be making a submission and a presentation to the National Council on who he feels will be an important complement to the ticket as we prepare in the next phase of our campaign, which is to recapture power in 2012.
Tony, we understand Nanado will present Dr. Bawumia as his pick for the December elections. Can you confirm this to us?
Well, I think that this question is totally misplaced, and I will not be the right person to be answering an important question like this. The flag bearer is the man who is the person everybody was expecting to make this announcement or nomination or presentation of who, in his view, would be an appropriate complement to the ticket as we prepare for the 2012 election.
But Tony, why does the party release his CV to the media and not other candidates if he's not the obvious choice?
Well, I think that Dr. Bawumia's CV has been in circulation. I think this is an international technocrat. This is a man of huge stature, and I guess it shouldn't be difficult for anybody to Google his CV to know what he's done. And have put that out, and if maybe they have privileged information in respect of whether or not he's the candidate that the flag bearer will settle on, I'm not too sure. I have seen the CVs of other prospective candidates also, you know, which is around, and people are presenting themselves and marketing themselves and angling for. The important person in this respect is the flag bearer of the party. He's the main person everybody would. Tomorrow, making a presentation of the name who will compliment him as we prepare for the election. For, I mean, what is happening in respect of other camps is normal in every in every heated process like this. But I believe that, you know, Nanado understands the pulse. He's supposed to have consulted widely with everybody in the party. And I guess that by now, all that consultation would have come to an end. Nanado would have had a clear understanding of what the Ghanaian people are expecting of him, what the party people are expecting of him, and what his consultations, he's been able to make out of his consultations. And I guess that we can only wait and hope that Nanado will make that announcement tomorrow, and the Ghanaian people will hear who would partner him. If it is Baumia, fair enough. The party, as you know, has enjoyed some relative unity and focus, and we're steady, and we want to make sure that right after this event, we would all be able to rally around whoever has been chosen, and then we can begin to have a full complement of our campaign machine ready. And we would prepare to get into town and probably get the NDC out of office by the time the elections are getting closer. We are very confident about ourselves. We are very confident about our candidate and the party and the preparations we've done so far as we approach the elections in 2012.
Tony, there are some people in your party who think Nanado should have changed his running mate. Is that the case? Should he change his running mate?
Who? Because I cannot answer that question. When you say some people, who are you talking about here? I'm able to put names to some of these matters.
One person like PCF appear Ufori.
Well, the MPP is a democratic party, it's a descendant party. Various interests and various people will state their positions in respect of who their preferences will be. But you all do know that, I mean, the onus lies on Nana Akufo-Addo. I mean, I think that it is only clear, and the constitution of the party clearly states that, you know, it is the flag bearer's prerogative, but he must do that in consultation with the party and the executives of the party, or consult widely with the grassroots of the party. And I guess that Nanado hasn't gone through his listening tour, have listened to the people of the party, he's listened to the people of Ghana, and I guess he has a better idea of who would be able to complement him. I have my own views on these matters, but I don't think that my views are particularly material in this moment. Nanado is the man on the spot, and I guess he will be making that honest choice.
Just hold it. We have Benessin also on the line. Benessin is a pollster and managing editor of the Dispatch newspaper. Good evening and thanks for your time. So, Mr. Benessin, ahead of the media announcement tomorrow by the NPP flag bearer, what are your expectations?
Thank you. I'll be very surprised if Bernardo does not take Dr. Baumia.
Then, could you...
The number of advantages that the others do not have.
And what are some of these advantages?
He's marketed already. He's marketed already, that is one. Any skeleton in his cupboard would have been put out by now. The person that Nana is going to pick, if does not pick Baumia, do the MPP know the skeletons in the person's cupboard? These are major advantages that you cannot throw away. Bear in mind that the time frame between tomorrow and the deadline, I mean, for submission of names to the electoral commission will be so short to change in case a major scandal comes for somebody who has not been selected already or known.
But then there are some in the MPP who are saying that he didn't bring anything in respect of votes to the NPP.
That I don't think is true. I'm looking at the numbers. If you look at, if you combine the MPP's votes in the three northern regions, Nana Akufo-Addo and Dr. Baumia did better than President Kufo and Alhaji Aliyu Mahama in 2004. Since they didn't bring any votes, I don't know what they are talking about.
So you are saying he deserves a second chance?
Oh, obviously. And anytime, I know that there's a strong lobby within the MP who do not like Dr. Baumia for one reason or the other. But whenever I've carried stories that from an analyst point of view, Nana should pick Dr. Baumia, I've had leading members calling me who will not agree. And I've said it's not a matter of we. It don't matter in this situation that Nana Akufo-Addo is here to take the chance. So I know that post-tomorrow, there is a very big task of healing, of letting people understand that the box starts and stops with Nana Akufo-Addo.
So even though his candidature has strongly been criticized by J.H. Mensah and PCR Pierre Ofori, it will not affect him in any way.
Well, I think that the bottom line is, if you look at page 65 of Atta Kennedy's book, comment that Ken Ofori-Atta made, I think, is very instructive. He said that when President Akufo brought Alhaji Ali Mama, nobody questioned him. So why President Warren Akufo-Addo? We need to bear in mind that in 2008, the first choice was Alhaji Ali Mama. Pressure was put on him. He changed there. So I think that those who do not like the Bamia, the box stops and starts with Nana. Do you want a repetition of the Rawlings and Akar saga, where two incompatibles will be in the seat of government?
Do you foresee Nana Addo having a difficult time convincing the Council of Elders tomorrow?
Well, I don't think it will be difficult. Nana will try and convince them. If they say no, he can go ahead and decide that, yes, I've heard you, but I'll not take your advice. And I think those people can decide to vote for Osamu if they want to. But I think that it is his prerogative. And then I'm sure that the others will try and say no, ABC. And in 2008, when Nana was trying to, when there was this divide in 2008, one statement was made that the sins of the fathers should not be visited on the children. And I don't think that Nana losing by 40,000 votes was because of Dr. Bamia. I don't think so.
All right, many thanks for joining us. That was Ben Nelson, the pollster and managing editor of the Dispatch newspaper. Now back to you, Tony. So after the major announcement tomorrow, what is next for the NPP?
Well, I think that it would be an opportunity for us, like Uncle Ben has indicated, is from his own independent checks, as a pollster and an authoritative one at that, hazard that Bamia is a likely choice. I think it will also send a very important signal about the consistency and the fortitude of mind that Nana Akufo-Addo has, because he would have been the first, you know, leader of an opposition party in our country since our independence who have consistently repeated his ticket, you know, in two major elections. And I think that it speaks a lot about Nana's conviction, it speaks a lot about his belief, it speaks a lot also about his consistency with what he believes in. And I think that is what leadership is all about. But we only fold our hands and wait and see what name will be presented to the party. But I can tell you that, like Uncle Ben said, at the end of the day, the back stops with Nana Addo. The party is very prepared and willing to support whatever decision or whatever choice or whatever nomination that Nana Akufo-Addo makes to the party. It will not be greeted with any rancor. We would accept that and we will follow our leader in that respect.
Should there be any standoff?
Well, I don't foresee any standoff.
Wouldn't that divide the party?
I don't foresee any standoff in this matter. I don't foresee how a flag bearer or a running mate of the party can create any standoff in the NPP. The most important issue here is the top job, which is the presidency. And I think the presidency, we cannot continue to place a lot of emphasis on a running mate and forget that it is all about the presidency. It is who is in the driving seat that matters to us. And once the party is done with this announcement on Saturday, we are going to have a Muslim prayer service in Tamale at the Tamale Jubilee Park, where, you know, the Muslim prayers will be conducted, you know, to signify the essence of why the NPP have always chosen a Muslim Nodna to partner our ticket.
We are grateful for your time, Tony Kabo. Tony is the National Youth Organizer of the NPP, and still on the NPP, the national chairman of the party, Jake Obeti-Bilante, is raising red flags over what he described as the introduction of guns into the political discourse of the country. In an open letter to the president, the NPP chairman mentioned the alleged attack on some NPP supporters at Ododo-Diodio constituency, the alleged firing of gun by a national security operative in the 2009 by-election in Tripoli, among others, as worrying. We have on the line Jake Obichibilante to explain why he chose to write the open letter now. Thanks for your time, Ms. Obichibilante.
Thank you very much for having me on your program.
So what,
good evening to you and your listeners.
Good evening. What necessitated this letter?
Because guns have been introduced into our politics, and guns should have no place in our politics. Okay, we've now had, since last week, 10 days ago, guns being shown in four different places. Okay, now that the biometric registration has started, okay, there have been places where the guns have actually been fired. And in the case of Ofinso North, where we saw the bus with the bullet holes in the windshield and things, you know that when they're firing bullets like that, people can get hurt, people can get killed. And you've got in Ashanti the report of a young boy, okay, being shot, okay, by a political operative. Okay, so now is the time to stop it. Otherwise, you know, they can get out of hand. We don't want it to get out of hand.
Were these guns fired by NDC members only?
Well, I know that none of the instances that have been cited has involved any MPP person in firing a gun. Okay, but some of the instances I cited.
Mr. Lamte, in Taifa, some NPP members were also arrested.
Yes, not for firing guns. Nobody said they pulled a gun. Nobody said they showed a gun. Nobody said they came there with a gun. Okay, I mean, we don't want guns. We don't want to, if you pull a gun to cow me into submission, the next time you come in this country where it's so easy to get guns, you will find that when you pull your gun, I will also pull a gun. And then you will be thinking about firing, and then I'll be thinking about firing. And before we know, we'll both be firing, and then lots of people will get injured. We don't need that in politics in this country.
So what should we do in this case?
Well, we should do what they asked them. The president should turn around and then make a move against all those people who have so far been shown to have been showing guns in public, deal with them, and then let the word go out that anybody who comes and starts to bring violence into our politics will be dealt with drastically. We do not need violence in our politics.
Have you...
The Senegalese have just had a successful general election. The world is congratulating them. But even as they are being congratulated, they are still in mourning for those people who lost their lives at the beginning of the process. We don't want a single Ghanaian to die or to be injured because of the political process. It's not necessary.
But have the matter been reported to the police?
Well, you know, in Tripoli, okay, the Tripoli by-election, it was not only reported to the police, but the video evidence was available to the police. Nothing happened to that person. And because nothing happened, it's entirely possible that other people within the security services and things think that they can also pull guns in public and nothing will happen to them. In the incident, the two persons who were named as having shown guns are both members of the security apparatus of this country. Okay, and they think that they can go as security operatives and start pulling guns in public. They must be told that no. Okay, police officers, even when they're carrying guns, security operatives, when they're carrying guns, don't show those guns, okay, unnecessarily. And, and especially they don't show those guns if they are part of the problem and not a part of the solution.
So what advice do you have for government?
My advice is for the president to take immediate action to show that he is serious. And then all those people who have shown guns so far will be dealt with, so that anybody else who thinks that they can actually ever show a gun will know that they too will be dealt with.
And how about your members? How are you advising them
including
also?
Our members, including all Ghanaians, anybody who shows a gun, okay, or who fires a gun, should be dealt with. And it should be done for everybody. And it should start now, to those who have already done so, so that nobody does it again.
All right. Many thanks for your time.
Thank you.
That was Jake Obichibilante. And we had earlier spoken to the Director of Operations at the Castle, Neil Lante Vanderpoel. Unfortunately, we are not getting through him. It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana Accra and also on all our regional FM stations across the country. And these are some of your text messages. This registration is not a third world war, therefore everyone must go and register peacefully. From Evans Asesewa, Baumia is the best man to partner Nanadu to lose once again for Professor Mills to complete the Better Ghana agenda. From Abbas Drapa, at Nanadu can go for Bill Clinton or Barack Obama. Ghanaians will still reject him as well as the elephant. And that's from Azizwa. It's still Behind the News. And peasant farmers are raising issues with government on why it has stopped absorbing the extension of its estate by the country's agricultural colleges, according to the farmers. While the lack of agriculture extension offices is hampering their work, products of the various agricultural colleges are not engaged by the government, a situation they describe as discriminatory. The president of the Tono Irrigation Cooperative Farmers Union, Ahmed Bogobiri, who raised the issue at an advocacy workshop, has joined us in the studio and is also with Susie Seko, a farmer, executive member of PFAG Ohoi District. You are both welcome to the studio.
Thank you.
Now let me start with you, Mr. Bogobiri. What are the concerns you are raising?
Thanks very much for giving me this opportunity to discuss issues concerning farming. My greetings goes to my fellow peasant farmers all over the country. And also we thank the Bootsack Fund for giving us funds to run this advocacy capacity building program. We as farmers have realized that small-scale peasant farmers have poor access to extension services, and that is affecting our productivity. And we believe that access to extension will help improve and give us good agronomic practices, inject innovations systems into production. And we also take advantage of research findings to help us as peasant farmers to produce our production, to increase our production. Peasant Farmers Association of Ghana is also advocating that there should be an increase of extension services from the ratio of 1:1,300 farmers to 1:1,000 farmers in the country. Like I've said, we've realized that when government engages the youth to go for courses in extension training at our various colleges in the country, after coming out successfully, government doesn't absorb them into the civil or public service to give the experience that they have been taught at school to we as farmers, as their school children. And this is why we are appealing to the government to try as much as possible, like teachers trained, nurses being trained at the colleges, end up being absorbed into the public service to render their services to mankind. Much as we farmers too are producing to feed the nation, we also need the services of our extension officers. But we've realized that after going through their courses, they are giving out to find out their own means of employment. This is something that we are rejecting. We are calling on government to see to it that after finishing their courses, they should bring them to the fields and then those schoolers to go into better production practices.
So have you sought answers from the appropriate authorities?
That is why we are running this capacity building. We will go into research after our findings will finally go to the appropriate stakeholders and then present our petition to them.
So without the extension offices, it means that there's nothing that peasant farmers can do. You need their input.
Of course. We need the inputs of the extension farmers after going several years of training. We need what they have learned from the colleges to impact that knowledge to we as peasant farmers so that we can also impact it to our fellow members.
You mentioned the ratio is 1:1,300. How is that practicable? One extension officer to 1,300 farmers.
Yeah, that is because government has refused to engage more of them into the system.
Was it only recently or it's been over the years?
It has been over the years. You know, there was some time ago, either between 1992 or 1993, government came out with a policy of redundancy. And most of the extension officers in the system at that time were redundant. A case in point is within my project at Tono Irrigation Project. For now, we have only six extension officers dealing with between 4,000 to 5,000 farmers. Can you imagine this? How can they render their services? Why is a lot of them are being trained and kept out of business? If I say business here, I mean they have refused to employ them to impact their knowledge to be as peasant farmers.
All right, Mr. Bogibiri, let me also talk to Susie. So, you're executive member, or are you a farmer?
I'm a farmer.
You're a farmer. So, can you tell us the situation in the Ohohoi district?
Well, I'm a female farmer, as the name goes, and then we have a lot of problems with the women because a lot of them are illiterate. And then the usage of the agri chemicals. It's a very difficult situation. It tampers with our farming activities because a lot of women cannot read even what is written on the containers, and then the use of fertilizers. So it tampers with our production. So we need a lot of technical assistance from the extension officers. Yes. So we are just appealing to the government to employ more of the extension officers. We women want more of the female extension officers so that we can have woman-to-woman discussions with them on the field, on our farms.
But are there enough women agri extension officers?
I've never seen one.
You've never seen one?
No.
That means it will have to be the men who have to assist you.
To get the extension officers?
Yes.
The female extension officers?
No, the men will have to assist you if there are not enough women extension officers.
The extension officers are not even enough.
What is the ratio in
the
your...
The ratio in my district? Well... The national ratio is 1:1,300. One extension officer to 1,300 farmers. So you can imagine my area, we are mostly farmers. And women are into rice farming mostly around my area. And so by the time an officer goes around all the districts, before the person comes to your farm, the farming season would have been over. So,
before this training workshop, have you made this known to the appropriate authorities?
The PFAG?
Yes.
Yes, yes.
And what response did they give you?
Well, that's why we are having this program. This training program, so that we can appeal through this medium and then tell.
Is it the first time this program is being held?
No, we've had programs, training programs, but this particular one is about the extension
officers.
Yes.
So, in effect, you want government to bring in more agri extension officers so that they can help you,
yes,
with your farming activities.
Yes.
Now back to you, Mr. Bogibiri. So after this training workshop, what next?
I will go into research.
Research, and what
will
you...
Also go back to impact the little knowledge that we have acquired from this training to our fellow members.
Research as in what exactly?
Research on our field works concerning our production capacity. Also research into how we can also prepare our own proposals for assistance from the various NGOs and other organizations like the BUSAC funds, instead of relying on service providers to do it for us. I think this capacity building has been that we are going to give us a lot of knowledge as to how we can also write our own proposals and teach our fellow members to.
In the event that government does not absorb the extension officers trained by the country's agri colleges, what do you do?
I will go through the normal procedure. Of course, the Minister of Food and Agriculture is there. We also have some stakeholders. Then when we make our presentation, then we'll get to the politician.
And have you sought help from other stakeholders apart from government, maybe like NGOs?
Like NGOs doing what?
Helping in bring some of these agricultural extension offices.
Yeah, we know very well that some NGOs engage some of the extension offices. They also hold workshops and they also interact with us, so that from time to time they also go with us on workshops to teach us on how to use some of the agro inputs. But then what we are saying here is the peasant farmer, for that matter, a lot of us don't have extension services from the trained extension officers who are left to find their own means of employment. We are saying here now and for now that we are saying that government should do its best to engage them like the way they engage nurses and teachers into the public and civil service. We are also saying they engage them to come to the fields. We are their school children. When they come to the fields, they interact with us. They will show us the best method of applying certain chemicals and agricultural products.
All right, we are very grateful for your time in the studio. That was Ahmed Bogobiri, that's branch chairman PFAG, that's Peasant Farmers Association of Ghana, and then Susie Seko, a farmer, and also executive member of PFAG Hohoi District. Many thanks for joining me in the studio.
Thank you very much. We hope that next time you call us again.
And the Deputy Minister of Food and Agriculture, Issa Befi, agreed to talk to us. Unfortunately, we are not getting through to him. Behind the news, live on Radio Ghana, Accra. And back to the NPP story, the national chairman of the party, Dick Ubetebi, is raising red flag over what he described as introduction of guns into the political discourse of the country. And in an open letter to the president, the NPP chairman mentioned the alleged attack on some NPP supporters at Odududu constituency, the alleged firing of guns by a national security operative in the 2009 by-election in Tripoli, among others, as well. Worried. And we have on the line Nilante Van Der Poel. Many thanks for joining us, Ni. Yeah, Ni, welcome. So what do you make of Jake's open letter to the president?
If you want me to sum it, I would just say it's just a sheer case of an irresponsible conclusion.
He cited an instance where he said that a meeting on Monday evening, 19th March 2012, some NPP members attended a meeting in Accra Central in Odududu constituency. The meeting was attacked by a crowd who sought to disrupt it by hurling bottles and stones, resulting in injuries to some of the NPP members. And he said Ni is on record as accepting that those who attacked the NPP members were from his family and his supporters.
Where did I say it? And on which platform?
Well,
where did I say that? It's a lie. Jake is a liar. Jake is just a symbol of lies. He's an epitome of a liar.
Ni, I endowed you to tone down.
No, madam, that is the only description I can give Jacob Jonathan. He's a liar, because anybody who makes statement, categorical statement like
this is a national station.
Madam, I know it's a national station. I've worked in GBC before. I know what GBC expects of me, but I'm expressing who Jake is. I say Jake is a liar.
Was there ever a meeting that some members of your family and supporters held stones to some NPP members.
I thought that you would have said there was there any meeting that your members of family were or are deemed to have or are supposed to have. There was no meeting of that nature where my family members or supporters disrupted. Something happened in Zongo Lane between the NPP supporters and the Zongo Lane Youth Association. The Zongo Lane Youth Association, it is a group of young men and women from different political parties. You can't say they are NDC, you can't say they are Nilanti Vanakoi supporters.
So how do we resolve this issue of guns?
The issue has been resolved. We all had a meeting at the Police Divisional Command. The NPP, the NDC, we all had a meeting and certain measures were taken and the two of us decided to cooperate to maintain peace and order in our area. So I don't know where Jake is coming from. Jake means that Jake is not in touch with his people on the ground. Jake doesn't know that this issue has been resolved and the issue was resolved at the instance of the police. And Jake doesn't know that it was rather his people who did not do what is right. And I said the police cautioned all of us to maintain peace and order. Right now, as I'm talking to you, madam, there are about 17 cases against the NPP functionaries and apparatchiks and against the police station. One person was just granted bail at our request because of their family member that to plead with us, to forgive him. So we are ready to maintain peace in the area because we know that seat is ours. But NPP wants to intimidate us because their parliamentary candidate is walking around with tax, carrying illegal weapons, and when they see the police, they run away. He is going around and pick up with boys and going around and intimidating party agents and issue officials. So, madam, for how long can that continue? The people of Odoedodo Constituency are determined to protect the integrity of the registration exercise. They are saying, if you don't hail from the place, if you don't reside in the place, you will not register there. And this is a message that people cannot stand. Because they are passing people from places and bringing them to our area, giving them house numbers, and when you ask the person to point to that house, he does not know.
Many,
this is the problem we are facing.
Many thanks for joining us, Nee. That was Nee Lante Van Der Poy, parliamentary candidate for Odododo constituency. It's still behind the news live on Radio Ghana Accra and on all our regional FM stations across the country. Now to our final story. It is acknowledged that education is the key to the development of every country. It is in this direction that the 1992 Constitution of Ghana stipulates the implementation of the free compulsory basic education. Every Ghanaian child of school-going age is expected to enjoy free basic education. Civil society organizations in education, however, say over the years, Ghana's education policies have witnessed undue political interferences. These organizations have cited the Education Strategic Plan and National Blueprint on Education as an example of policies which have not been implemented to the letter. Some member organizations are embarking on a project to secure the commitment of political parties to the Education Strategic Plan. Kosie Sare is the Executive Director of Action for Rural Education, one of the organizations implementing the project, and he has joined us on the line. Many thanks for joining us, Kofi. Hello, Kofi.
Yeah, hello.
So why do you say the education policies of the country have suffered undue interferences over the years?
Society is of the strong opinion that in times past we've seen our education strategic plan and very, very important education policies being unnecessarily tampered with by political authority for political reasons rather than for developmentally expedient reasons. And that is the reason why society is mobilizing all opinions and all its forces and actions to compel political parties to commit themselves to implement the current education strategic plan and not to interfere with it when they come in
In your view, why do you think governments would like to influence these policies to their advantage?
Obviously, the immediate one, which is quite popular, is the 3-year, 4-year duration. We've seen certain governments changing the duration of SHS to suit political reasons rather than developmentally expedient reasons. And to the extent that the parents and the people that are citizens of this country are always at the receiving end of such political decisions, we think that we need to begin to look at the education policy issues from the national perspective and not from the myopic perspective which we have been doing in the past couple of years. So we are saying that, for example, in the case of the SHS, there might be no need to change it to another 3 years because any further move will end up affecting the child and the parents who are spending so much money to feed them through school. And that is only an example. There are several of such policies that have been truncated or that have been changed just because a particular political party feels that its philosophy is not consistent with them. And we think that practice should end. Ghana will not benefit from that. It is only a political party that will benefit from that. And we are not interested in benefits that accrue to political party, but rather benefits that accrue to the American people.
Listeners would like to know what education strategic plan is. Can you explain it to us?
Yeah, you know, every ministry in the country has a strategic plan, a broad plan. And the broad plan shows the focus, the direction, and the broad objective of that particular ministry. And within this plan, there are policies that are supposed to support the operationalization of this plan. So the education ministry, like all other ministry or sectors, has what we call the education strategy plan 2010-2020. And within this plan, we have a set of indicative policy areas and also policies that are aimed at achieving the broad targets of the plan. Now, what happens is that currently we have a situation where we have a plan which says, let's say, free basic education up to primary level, up to GHS level, sorry. And then government provides subsidies to secondary education. Now, if another political party comes and it feels that it wants to do something different from free basic education and highly subsidized secondary education, then in a way that particular administration will obviously tamper with the education strategy plan. And we think that the persistent tampering with the education strategic plan only leads to waste of resources because you end up duplicating certain functions or cutting short certain policies and programs that have started, you know, that should under normal circumstances end logically. And that is a source of waste to society. And we think that we should use this national electioneering campaign platform to drum home the message that parties may have their but they should try and situate their manifestos, especially the education manifestos, within the education strategy plan, which is linked with the Millennium Development Goals which Ghana has subscribed to and has to be attained by 2015.
Kofi, you are also embarking on Education Agenda 2015 project. What are the details?
The Education Agenda is simply an education manifesto. Every political party has its own manifesto. And most of the issues in the manifesto are promises that are politically expedient once again. They are promises that the political parties think that are quite attractive, you know, in their eyes. Now, we have seen that many a times most of the manifestos we have in this country are not manifestos. They are actually promises, you know. So they don't come with any indication about how the promises themselves will be implemented. So we have gone around the country consulting citizens groups, NGOs, and the wider civil society community to elicit opinions about how our education system should be governed in the next 4 years.
Kofi, hold it. Stephen Balado Menu, MP for Ahafo North South, was a former chairman of Select Committee on Education, and he has also joined in the debate. Many thanks for joining us, Mr. Balado Menu.
Thank you.
Do you agree with the assertion that education policies have suffered undue political interferences over the years?
Yes, I do.
And
because education as an enterprise is the key to development. And before development can be sustained, it has to be consistent. And what we have had over the years in this country regarding our educational system is anything but consistency. You see that this government comes, he draws up a plan, I'll do this. After there is a change of government, the new government that comes also changes the focus. And it is sad that as we do this, it is the children who are in the schools who suffer. So I do agree that politics have unnecessarily interfered with our educational system, and that has not neared to the benefit of our pupils and students and the nation as a whole.
What exactly could be the reasons for such interferences?
Hello?
Hello, Mr. Balado Menu.
Yes.
What could be the reasons for such interferences?
I would say that it is political expediency. We sacrifice
Hello? Hello, Mr. Balado Menu. It appears we've lost Mr. Balado Menu on the line. So, back to you, Kofi. To what extent have you been able to collate views on the issue? That is, how would you like education to be promoted in the country?
Yeah, we've had, I think Honorable Balado Menu has hit the nail right on the head. And as objective as he is, it is no, there is no gainsaying, I mean, there is no disputing the fact that education policies have suffered enough political interference. And I think that he should agree with us that it is time to end it. The fact that one party began with 4 years and another party changes to 3 years doesn't mean that the next party should make it another 4 years. The frequent change will not help us. And I'll be happy if Honorable Elmian concludes in that direction. Back to the question.
Yes.
We have consulted in the Northern Region. We've met NGOs, citizens groups, religious groups, traditional authorities in the Northern Region. We met we did a middle sector consultation in Kumasi, where the middle regions attended. And just yesterday, we had a southern sector conversation at the airport West Hotel in Accra. Now, we have collected views, and we are now putting together what we call a draft education manifesto for civil society. We call it the Education Agenda 2012, or the Draft Education Manifesto of Civil Society. And we are going to meet in the next 2 weeks to validate the draft document. Now, in that document, what is beginning to emerge is that, for example, civil society is more interested in, for instance, the next political administration injecting more money into basic education, especially at the kindergarten level, because we realize that 40% of children who are 8-4 years are not in school, but they are supposed to be in kindergarten. So if we want to achieve the target of making sure that every child that is 4 years is in kindergarten by 2015, then it means that in the next 4 years, we should expand kindergarten infrastructure, invest in the training of kindergarten teachers, and expand access also to kindergarten. And that we think it's the number one priority, because that is the most deficient area in basic education. What is also emerging from our consultation is that civil society is not quite enthused about making secondary education free, because of the impact that the financing impact it will have on basic education, which is currently underfunded and deficient in quality, and also the concerns that a wholesale declaration of free secondary education will come with an accompanying quality deficit. You know, so society is saying from what is emerging from our conversations, the feeling is that we might end up agreeing that certain costs, certain items in the cost of secondary education will have to be absorbed by government. For instance, admission fees. That is quite a significant chunk of the secondary school fees. So I think that by in the next 2 weeks, we should be heading towards an agreement where we agree that certain cost elements in secondary education should be absorbed by government and necessarily making the secondary education entirely free.
Kofi, how deeply involved are the political parties in the project?
Yeah, the political parties are one of the key partners for this project. Initially, we had planned to meet the political parties tomorrow at Alisa Hotel. Unfortunately, we had to postpone it because the time wasn't convenient to the MPP, because the MPP, we are told, will be naming their running mate tomorrow. So we didn't want to have our meeting at an inconveniencing day to the MPP. So we postponed it, I think, to the next week. So the political parties are very, very much involved. We've had first round of consultations with them. They are aware of the project, but formally we're supposed to meet them tomorrow to give them a thorough briefing on the project and then take them through the contextual analysis of the education strategy plan and as an entry point. But we are going to have a political party conference on education, where we are going to discuss all these issues with all the political parties.
All right. We are grateful for your time, Kofi. Kofi Asare is the Executive Director of Action for Rural Education, one of the organizations implementing the project. And also joining us on the line is the Chairman of the Select Committee on Education and MP for Nadoli East, Masayas Asomaposa. Many thanks for joining us. What are your views on the claim that undue political interferences have been brought to bear on education policies?
Madam, the line is rather very, 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 very faint.
Could you reposition yourself well, or you go ahead with your submission?
Really, you know what? I've just arrived from Accra, and I've...
Many thanks. It appears we are having a problem with our line, so we could not speak to Mr. Masayas Asomaposa. It's still behind the news live with Radio Ghana. These are some of your text messages. Then Baumia S, the best man for Nana and the NPP. That's from Salifu Wali Wali. Francis Ajani Akonsombo says Nanado can bring on an angel from the heavens to partner him. He will lose heavily to the NDC. I think the NDP is making too much noise about this registration. If they have no message, they should go. Baba Musa UDS, the Ghanaians are not ready to bring the NPP to power again. There is nothing good about the Nanado Baumia ticket. Mohamed Sule Tamale, Dr. Baumia would be the best partner for Nanado. They did better in the northern region in 2008 than former President Kufuor and Aliu Mahama. Sadiq KNUST, dirty politics should have no place in Ghana. Jake has no proof but wants to create tension in this coming election. And this text message says NPP will surely lose the upcoming election no matter who is picked as the running mate, so they should stop wasting their energy and resources both all the way. Cool chop by Tibiru Lisowell from Paga. And this is where we wrap up tonight's edition of Behind the News. Isaac Adu controlled the sounds. My producers were Bryce Agama, Phyllis Kofi, Christopher Esudu, John Pobi, and Kinsley Obintre. My summarizer was Ibrahim Kwating. My name is Agatha Sama. Thanks for staying tuned.